afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, June 14th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, how are you, Melody? One more week of spring. Happy Flag Day,
yes,
by the way. Flag Day, as we know, honors Old Glory every year on this date, commemorating the adoption of the U.S. flag on June 14, 1777. Since then, the design of the flag has been modified 26 times. For 47 years, in fact, the 48-star flag was in effect until President Eisenhower ordered the 50-star flag in August of 1959. The country's so divided these days. Today seems like a perfect day for all 300 million of us to lay aside our differences, celebrate our similarities, our common desire to make our nation better.
Confirmed. Confirmed.
Good.
But at least for the day, but if you watch the news, it ain't happening. I wonder how many people out there even know that it's Flag Day anymore.
I suspect very few.
Very few. Very few. But anyway, we do, and that's what we're important, and that's all that matters.
I was in a Flag Day parade when I was in sixth grade.
Were you really?
I just remember that.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Flag Day used to be a very big deal. Yeah.
I played a police officer. Oh. Thanks. Yeah, how about that? I had my own nightstick and handcuffs.
Wow. Well, you know, he changed the flag in 1959, the last time that it's been changed. And, you know, we were all living through that time. So I think it was a very big deal at that point in time. You know, we were all small. What year were you born, Dave?
1982.
All right.
I was born in 56, so I would have been just about 3 years old.
Yeah. And I wasn't born yet, but anyway, I was. And so we lived through it, and it was a big day. They made a big deal about it, so I actually remember. So anyway, let's go ahead and see if we can remember what gold and silver is. You know, getting hit again one more time. It's trying to test that 1800 level, down 11 bucks today at the New York spot price aftermarket, 1808. Silver was down 7 cents. It's still holding 2106. Platinum was down 13 at 927. However, palladium did manage to be up $13. 1,891. The USDX today was up 0.30, 105.50. So how high is she going to go? Don't know. But we did have a little bit of a reprieve in crude oil today. Let me get to the next screen and take a peek at it to make sure that it is updated. You have the S&P falls for a fifth day, slips deeper into a bear market territory ahead of the Fed's decision coming up. And I saw a headline, Dave. I don't think we have it because it just came out. 30-year mortgage rates.
Yep.
Surging to 6.28%. That'll bring that market to a screeching halt. And I've already been reading that housing prices are tanking. And so is this all great for the economy? Wouldn't think so. That means what your credit card rates, I mean, everything that involves an interest percentage point is going to get more expensive. And that includes corporate debt. That includes government debt. So, you know.
If you're in debt, Melanie, it's a good time to get out.
Absolutely. So That is amazing. And we'll have to see what the treasury, 10-year treasury, I saw that top 3.48%. It's the highest in 11 years. That was about a half hour ago, so I don't know if it's still there, but let's take a peek at the markets, paper markets. So the Dow was down 151 points. They tried hard as they might to keep it above in the green territory. Couldn't do it. 151 to the downside, 30,364. S&P, 3,735, down 14 points. The NASDAQ managed up 19, but, you know, it's kind of like, what's the point? 10,828. Asia, you had a mixed markets over there. Nikkei was down 350 points. The other two markets that we talk about, the Shanghai and Hang Seng, they were just up fractionally. Europe, I don't know. I've seen Europe down for I don't know how long now, weeks. I haven't seen any green again, and they're all negative once again. France was down a little over 1%. They had the biggest decline. The bonds, 10-year yield, 3.467. And this is all before he raised rates tomorrow. You know?
Yeah. Well, look at the 2-year and the 5-year rates as well.
What are they? I don't have them in front of me.
Well, 5 years at 3.585, higher than the 10-year. It's another inverse yield curve. The 2-year is at 3.42.
Wow.
So that's hanging around inversion as well. And as we know, that usually, almost virtually always spells recession.
Well, you know, they're going to try to avoid that word. But, I mean, it is almost every article that I read, and so much people are laying off already. They're seeing more and more. And that's just not in the crypto area. I mean, that's the most popular because that has the most, that had the biggest hit. But, I mean, everywhere. And this one, Dave, I know it's not on our topic to discuss today, but I want to because it says natural gas plummets as Freeport delays facility restart following explosion. It delays facility restart. So you would think it would be just the opposite.
Down 15% today.
Yeah, so it plunged. They had this Freeport LNG had a fire last week. And won't be back up running. Won't be back up and running soon. So my question is: yes, it's taking natural gas off the market, but is the demand that weak that by taking this off the market, it actually caused the natural gas to fall that much? Because usually it would make the opposite if you're not going to have any supplies. I mean, they say it's temporarily oversupplied. How can it be oversupplied? I'm missing something here. I'm not quite sure what.
Well,
if they're not producing, if the facility is not working, how does it get oversupplied?
Well, that's a good question. I unfortunately am not well versed in natural gas technicalities, so I'm not a good one to answer that question.
So that means the demand has dropped so much that it would mean that they're not going to reduce production. And they say this is the result of an oversupplied U.S. natural gas market. So, I don't know. We'll look into that. I mean, could you figure that out for me, please? You know, and maybe we can talk about it on Thursday. Because that is a huge drop for natural gas, a needed one. But anyway, let's go back and see what the markets have done. Hold on a second. Oil was down 2.51 at 118. Brent was down 1.62 at 120. Natural gas down 15%, 7.281. And down 1.32. So that's it for the paper markets. And I know it's something very simple, you know, that Oh, yeah, okay. But anyway, so let's go ahead and see. We got that settled as far as Jerome Powell has vowed to increase the Fed funds rate by 50 basis points this week. There's a report in the Wall Street Journal suggested that policymakers might consider a bigger move after we saw that inflation pick up in May. Meanwhile, the too big to fail JP Morgan Chase said there was a non-trivial risk of a 100 basis point increase, Dave.
Well, we'll talk more about this in a minute. Liquidity draining out of financial markets sent Bitcoin to its lowest in about 18 months. Melody will take that back up in the first segment. But crypto's trouble isn't all external. The freezing of withdrawals by the Celsius lending platform, adding to investor concerns that systemic risk in the crypto market will accelerate the digital asset market meltdown. And, of course, we have the Bank of England facing more grim economic data ahead of their meeting on Thursday, with Prime Minister Boris Johnson talking about a new fight within his own Conservative Party over a plan to override Brexit, which risks a trade war with the EU and renewed legal retaliation. It's a volatile world out there, Melody.
It really is. And you know what also makes it very volatile is this with wholesale prices being up. And some more bad news about inflation. We learned from the Labor Department this morning that wholesale prices rose at a near record pace in May. The PPI, the Producer Price Index, which is a measure of the prices paid to producers of goods and services, rose 0.8% for the month and 10.8% over the past year. Now, this monthly rise was in line with the, you know, with what everyone was sort of expecting, but it was a doubling of the 0.4% pace in April. And, you know, they so much like to pull out what's really important, you know, food and energy. That's not necessary to survive. Nah, let's pull that out. The core PPI rose 0.5% on the month, and on a year-over-year basis, the core measure was up 6.8%. So that's the number that they'll focus on. The two PPI measures remain near historic highs, 11.5% for headline and 7.1% for core, both hit in March. Now, this data is significant in that prices at the wholesale level, of course, feed down to your prices. And, of course, we're seeing these prices, the consumer prices, running at the highest level since December of 1981. The CPI increased 8.6% annually in May. And, of course, that kind of, you know, took away any hope that inflation had peaked in the spring, Dave.
Well, for wholesale prices, energy made up much of the May gains, and that core concept is almost as bad as the U3 unemployment rate, both unrealistic and both understated. In any event, the index for final demand energy rose 5%. On the month, part of an overall 1.4% surge in the final demand of goods. The goods services imbalance has been at the core of the inflation pressures as consumer demand has shifted strongly in an economy that generally is more dependent on services. Within that energy gain, gasoline rose over about 8.5%. Other fuel types of fuel pushed higher as well. And that may have something to do with this next story.
Yeah, it might. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, all you hear about is, you know, how all these airlines are so booked, but their booking slipped, what, 2.3% in May, just from a month earlier? And that is the second consecutive monthly drop this year. But your fares, that soared over 2019 levels. On the one hand, customers spent $8.3 billion on domestic tickets last month, up 6.2% from April. But so far this year, consumers spent about $37 billion for domestic flights, almost double what they spent in the first 5 months of last year. So far they've been able to stomach the higher fares, the consumers, but we'll have to see what happens if these gasoline prices continue to rise, and it's probably why you've seen this 2.3% dip in May. So,
well, if that trend continues for another month, that's going to be bad news for airlines, which look to the summer season as the peak travel season, along with later on in the springtime when airlines make the bulk of their revenue every year. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, we certainly will. And I think now this is a numbers predictions by MasterCard Spending Pulse, and they track spending across all payment forms, forecast that back-to-school spending is going to be up 7.5% from July 14th through September 5th compared to last year. But last year, the sales rose 11%. I don't think they're going to get 7.5%, not with the prices of everything else. I think this is truly premature as far as their hopes and their predictions. I bet they're hoping to get 7.5%. But from the 2020 back to school period, the sales did fall 0.8%. But they're expecting to be the 2022 back to school season to be 18% higher than 2019, when supposedly things were going pretty hot I just can't see that happening. There's no way it's going to be 18% higher than 2019, and they're looking for 7.5%. I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by various industries trying to prop up themselves with overly positive or hyperbolic numbers. But I was surprised by the amount of this forecast. For the very reasons you're talking about, namely inflation. And based on consumer sentiment the last several months, I mean, boy, I don't see this happening.
Yeah, these numbers were taken out of the sky. So I bet if they get 3%, they're going to be very happy. Anyway, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and the blog that Dave produces. And they're great. We got lots of sign-ups for those, and we thank each and every one of you. Premiums on Silver Eagles are beginning to drop. I think everybody's kind of frozen, all waiting for gold and silver to go lower and lower and lower. And you know, you want to buy low, sell high, but usually no one ever buys low. They always wait till it goes back up, and then they start buying. But that's okay, because we got a long way to go. And the dollar is not our friend right now, and interest rates. I'm going to talk a little bit about interest rates here in the next couple of programs. About they're not always negative. Gold is not negative with rising interest rate venues or climate. So gold has done very well in the past with rising rates. So just keep that in mind. And don't let anybody tell you that gold is going to perform bad because of rising rates. Not true at all. And so just be careful what you hear out there. I can't believe some of the stuff I hear. But if you have any questions, give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Or you can email me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Now, if you don't hear from me, call me, because I've been having a lot of the emails go into the spam file. There was a major update about a month or so ago, and I can't believe people that I've been emailing for years are ending up in my spam. So, you know, I wish they just leave well enough alone and leave my computer alone and quit the updates. And, you know, it's just aggravating. But it's like they don't have anything better to do. You know, instead of just trying to eliminate people that are hacking and stealing your info and stuff like that to protect us from that, they have to go and mess with our screens and everything else. Anyway, I'm just one of my pet peeves. But anyway, I'm not sure this is the right way, Dave, because I don't think people know, and to a good degree, people don't know how to debate anymore. But I don't know that people know how to argue and fight. And so I don't know, and this might be a good thing, Dave.
I think it certainly heads in the right direction. Sorry, just distracted. Melody, we got four Supreme Court justices. Got Bruce Springsteen, Oprah Winfrey, Twitter's Jack Dorsey, and several U.S. presidents all have something in common. They were high school debaters. Now, these days, most parents want kids to put a sock in it and just shut up, stop arguing. Well, it turns out we maybe should be encouraging them to do more of it, but more systematically. Diving into speech and debate in high school and college is one of the most effective ways, experts say, to prepare to lead and influence community groups, cities, companies, and even countries. According to two-time world debate champion and former Harvard debate coach Bo Seo, who writes this stuff in his new book called Good Arguments. Now, here are three of his lessons from debating that we could all use to live and work better. First, disagree better. I mentioned earlier, we live in a divided world where our differences are amplified over our similarities, and we're terrible. As Melody suggested, at disagreeing with one another respectfully. I mean, just look at the toxic social media fights and the literal madness on cable news. CO lists the 4 points debaters learn that teach them how to argue. Or whether, in fact, an argument's even worth having. What's the point? Why is it true? When has it happened before? And who cares? We can all pay better attention to these things the next time we're in a disagreement. And that probably includes your spouse or best friend. Second, truth takes work. In debate, even if you're arguing the right side, you might still lose. It's all about how persuasive you are. With misinformation and disinformation on the rise, take the time to calmly and kindly convince people of the truth, even if you think it's obvious. And third, agreeableness is downright bland. We're increasingly likely to self-sort into like-minded groups. One poll by General Lab and Axios found that 71% of young Democrats wouldn't even go on a first date with someone who voted for the opposing party's presidential candidate.
And that's the problem.
There you go. 37% say they wouldn't consider friendship with that person. Among young Republicans, the shares were 31% and 5%, respectively. Debate teaches kids to argue passionately 1 minute and show camaraderie in the next. Like, hey, good argument. Or, I didn't think about that before. We can all learn to do that. And we should. The bottom line, don't be afraid to disagree, respectfully anyway. And let's teach our kids and grandkids to do the same. Many of those with this critical skill can and will go on to do big things in life. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
Okay. I know there's some things in there I want to say, and it really is sad to think. And that poll is a little disturbing to see that 71% of young Democrats wouldn't even... I mean, date or 37% wouldn't even consider a friendship. How wrong is that? I mean, you can't debate someone who has those types of thoughts or, I don't want to say feelings or beliefs. You can't debate those. But this is kind of the world we live in, though, too, I think, Dave, is it has come so much to such divided, and there are so many myths, truths out there. And the problem is, to some degree, it's with as much influence that the social media has on people, and especially the youth, truth, I don't think they can find the truth. The truth is what fits in amongst their peers, and their truths become so, and they're not out there to find the truth. The truth to them is what they're told, and that's how divided I think we've become, and there's so many things that are changing, but that survey to me is shocking. It was literally shocking and disturbing.
The best class I had in high school was called Problems of Democracy. And our teacher, Leon Mayhofer, rest his soul. And this was from the beginning. I think it was a half a year class, two semesters. And from the very beginning until the end, every week, every other week, we had a series of debates. But the side you were on depended on basically a show of hands. Like if you supported side A, you were a side B debater, and vice versa. So you were forced throughout this class to debate and try and be persuasive on the position that you disagreed with in real life. And now this was in the early 70s, different times. However, we were in the midst of Watergate, and there were strong supporters of Richard Nixon and those who thought he deserved to leave office. And Mr. Mayhofer did us all a great service by forcing us to debate the other side, thereby, I think, improving our understanding, certainly improving our respect for the other person, and teaching us a couple of good lessons along the way, Melody.
True. But you know what? The key thing there, the article mentions about the most persuasive. So it really teaches you to become a salesman. How to sell your pitch. And I guess that's, and it reminds me of the movie. I think it was one of the financial movies where you had two head bankers like J.P. Morgan, like Jamie Dimon and someone. They were sitting there having coffee or a drink or a cocktail. And one says, you know, everybody thinks that we're really smart, you know, that we're brilliant, that we were able to do The Big Short, I think it was, that we're able to do what we did and make all this money. And the guy says, we're not brilliant at all. We're just good salespeople. And that's...
It's true.
And that's, I guess, part of the debate. I don't know how to solve the problem to where adults now communicate. But anyway, we're not here to solve that problem. But, you know, with the tightest labor market in years, more and more employees or employers in the U.S. are proactively saying that they're going to give candidates. And again, it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, so they're looking, before, it was sometimes you couldn't get a job if you had a criminal background or if you were a felon. You couldn't, you know, I wouldn't hire a felon, you know. I guess it depends on what businesses that these are. If it's, you know, McDonald's or, you know, I don't know. And I don't mean to sound like, you know, I'm being, you know. But there's actually a common phrase for this. It's called a fair chance. All the financial market angst isn't yet seeping into the job market, where most employers, maybe with the exception, possible exception of some tech companies, that are still desperate to hire, that they're using this fair chance practice. Means more workers who are usually sidelined, or let's face it, are they just really discriminated against, Dave? I mean, they made their choices in their life. But they are getting pulled into the workforce. 2.5% of job listings are indeed now advertising fair chance hiring. This is according to Ann Elizabeth Conkle. She's an economist at the job site Hiring Lab. Now, this is up just over 1% since early 2018. But it's still down. But I guess the high was 3.1% back in April, Dave.
Yeah, fair chance listings are defined by Indeed as those including that phrase, plus ones like no background check or, quote, felon friendly. The tight labor market has led some employers to loosen the way they do criminal background checks. And that's something that Civil Rights Act advocates have wanted for a long time. Plus, pulling in these workers also helps company keep wages down because they've found
Bingo.
That they can pay them less.
Bingo.
Yep. The bottom line, Conkle says, employers are warming a bit to consider this group, especially as they try to figure out different ways to attract the workers they need.
You know, it's really sad to think that we don't have the employees or the number of people to fill jobs out there. But it's all about the money. It's all about keeping wages down. And, hey, if someone had a did something, you know, that they regret and they cleaned up their life and so forth, you can tell that, you know. But to start advertising and it's, you know, I don't
felons,
know.
Felons wanted.
Hey, they can vote now, so what the heck? You can do anything in this life, and there's no consequences. You know, there's no accountability in this life anymore. You can do whatever you want to do when you want to do it, and, hey, you're welcomed opened arms, and you can continue to do it. Well, I don't know. It's just – anyway, Americans shop and eat. They're changing their ways with these high prices, and they're beginning, people, consumers are looking to buy more store brands, looking at lower costs in their meat and produce. Some are just doing with less. Food manufacturers, we talk about this all the time. I've been talking about this for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. They've been shrinking stuff for that long, but all of a sudden now it's popular to talk about shrinkflate. You know, the same size cereal in the boxes, but a little fewer ounces to that box. Everything looks the same. They've been doing it for years and years and years. Once upon a time, grocery shopping mainly fell to women, but these days 92% of adults do it. That means most everyone's noticed rising food prices, and many have adjusted its ways, both minor and potentially devastating. The cost of food at home is up 12% from last year. Now, this is the largest increase since 1979. Nearly every category of food the government tracks saw accelerating prices. Eggs are up 32%. Fats and oils were next on the list at 17%. Poultry, 17%. Milk, 16%. Incredible. And what also is incredible is I hear the music for the break. It's here already. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Saw it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients. This final segment featuring the office at 1-800-375-4188. BlackRock, which is the world's biggest fund manager, oversees trillions of dollars in index funds, which, among other things, means it gets a huge vote come proxy season. That's when all the shareholders get to vote for or against the company's board of directors, the appointment of its independent accounting firm, company's executive compensation plan, and other proposals. Today, Tuesday, BlackRock announced a small amount of progress in terms of reducing that power by handing voting decisions over to institutions that invest in its funds. The main winner from these changes is Institutional Shareholder Services, known as ISS, proxy advisory service that was already a dominant power in all shareholder votes. Ironically, BlackRock's attempts to implement shareholder democracy might end up further entrenching the ISS monopoly. BlackRock has almost $5 trillion in equity index funds and historically has made voting decisions for all but a small $400 billion slice of that pool. Its new voting choice product, which allows institutional investors to choose to take voting control of their shares, has expanded that slice to $500 billion over the past 5 months. BlackRock announced today that it's expanding the pool of eligible investors to include more funds in the UK, Canada, and Ireland. Now, the impact of this? Well, of the 6% of newly eligible institutional investors who signed on to voting choice this year, most simply switched from BlackRock's voting line to ISS's voting line. And both BlackRock and ISS vote with management most of the time. And even when they don't, they generally vote the same way. So, this change probably going to mean very little in practice, even as it increases ISS's power at the margin. Passive investors like BlackRock and Vanguard and Fidelity hold enormous power when it comes to shareholder voting. Raising concerns from some about how they wield it. Addressing concerns like that shareholder democracy sounds great in principle. I think decision-making should be devolved down to the level of the beneficial owners of the capital in question. In practice, however, if a pension fund owns a BlackRock index fund, then someone with assets in that pension fund is unlikely to care whether it's their pension fund or BlackRock that makes the voting decisions. I, for one, would want myself to make that choice. It's expensive to do due diligence on thousands of company proxies, and in practice, only huge investors like BlackRock dedicate the necessary resources, i.e. people, to doing so. Everybody else just generally uses ISS or a smaller rival, Glass Lewis. Thus, if and when individuals start being asked to make voting decisions, they're going to be extremely low-information voters. It's not clear to what extent that will be an improvement over the status quo, but I guess every little bit helps, right? Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets. Besides Melody's weekly financial market recap and Credit Bubble Bulletin blog Doug Nolan's insights on the first quarter Z1, I have an article about, yes, inflation, interest rates, and recession. Stocks, bonds, and precious metals plummeted again yesterday as Wall Street reacted with continuing unencumbered knee-jerks to soaring inflation. Today wasn't a whole lot better. It appears there's widespread distrust and a self-fulfilling fear among investors about how forceful the Fed will be as it tries to put the evil genie back in the bottle. The S&P 500 is now officially in bear market territory, down 22% since it hit its most recent high this January 3rd. These market moves highlight the deeply uncertain outlook after more than a decade of growth for stocks and gold and low bond yields that made borrowing more affordable than ever for investors and consumers alike. So affordable, in fact, that U.S. consumers' collective personal debt has risen to over $23 trillion. And that's just under $70,000 per citizen. That's a lot. That's bad. The S&P 500 benchmark index closed down 3.9% on the day yesterday. The NASDAQ fell 4.7%. The Dow was down over 900 points at one point. The yield on 10-year treasuries climbed 22 points to 3.39%. That's what, again, was yesterday. Plus Bitcoin down another 14%+, and the rate on 30-year fixed mortgages hit 6.13, up another 0.15 as of today. Spiking prices are simply overshadowing the Fed's policy meeting today and tomorrow, where the Federal Open Market Committee will almost certainly hike interest rates by, I believe, 75 basis points. Inflation is driving prices upward at the highest level in over 40 years, leaving the Fed with little wiggle room to cut interest rates in the face of dizzying markets, as it's repeatedly done in years past, most recently in 2019. For now, the markets are just going to have to figure out how to live without the support of the Fed, at least to its liking. But the market's doing the Fed's work for it anyway by pushing borrowing costs higher, especially through big jumps in market interest rates during the last two trading sessions. The yield on the two-year treasury, it's the part of the yield curve the Fed controls directly, is at its highest level in 15 years. It's risen an extraordinary 40 basis points just since last Thursday's close. That kind of move in just 2 days is exceptionally rare. The two-year yield briefly topped that of the 10-year note yesterday, an event that, as I mentioned, is seen as a harbinger of the recession to come. Traders are now betting the FOMC will raise rates by 175 basis points by September 30th, which would mean at least one 75 basis point move between now and then. After the latest inflation numbers came out on Friday, again, as Melody mentioned, showing an increase of 8.6% in May, plus the 11% plus the producer prices, the stock, bond, and precious metal markets adjusted pretty quickly. Interest rates rose and stock, gold, and silver fell as investors figured correctly that it meant the Fed will raise rates more aggressively. This pattern has been evolving since last fall when many on the Fed said the inflation was only transitory, temporary. But it shows something interesting that deserves some credit where credit is due, I guess, even as inflation has become a national crisis. The Fed's the only Washington institution that seems to be focused on bringing it down despite the pain it will entail. Last decade, the Fed was often called the only game in town because it sought to stimulate a weak economy while other branches of government simply sat in their hands. And now it's in that role again, even as the circumstances have turned. Indeed, that the Fed is willing to tighten money even at the cost of a steep stock market downturn and a potential, if not likely, recession shows why a politically independent central bank is important to begin with. There are plenty of things the government could do to try and address the mismatch between supply and demand. It could cut spending, for one thing, raise taxes, particularly on the rich, on the other, aiming overall to curtail demand. Congress and the White House could also take steps to increase the supply of goods and services where bottlenecks exist, like in energy. But in the real world, the one we actually live in, our elected officials aren't doing those things, leaving it instead to the unelected members of the Fed to try to reduce demand by raising rates, despite those tools being blunt instruments for the task at hand. Fed tightening tends to most directly affect interest-sensitive sectors, such as housing, is on the verge of exploding, and it can have counterproductive effects on the supply side of the economy if higher rates make companies reluctant to invest in new capital. And nobody on Capitol Hill is talking seriously about any new wave of fiscal austerity. The Democratic side of the aisle talk of a redesigned Build Back Better bill that includes significant deficit reduction has been just talk. On the other side, Republican Senator Rick Scott of Florida pitched the idea of low-income Americans paying at least some federal income tax should Republicans win control of Congress in November. And that implies a tax increase on millions of Americans. But Scott backed down after others in his own party said, "Bad idea, Rick." Biden administration has taken steps to try and address specific supply snafus, like ensuring 24/7 operations at shipping ports, but it hasn't eliminated even some of the tariffs on Chinese imports. And that leaves Jerome Powell and his Fed colleagues who are meeting in Washington's Foggy Bottom neighborhood as we speak, as the only people in town ready to try to fight inflation, even as it causes more pain. Now, we're not going to know when inflation has peaked until it has. I have a feeling we'll be needing at least a few more months before we're able to determine that. And we won't know whether a recession will hit until we're already in one. The National Bureau of Economic Research will let us know. And we certainly can't predict how the markets will react following either one of those. Although last week, the Luthold Group's chief investment strategist, Jim Paulson, reported this good news. Quote, "Normally, the stock market struggled the most as inflation was moving up, but did fantastic subsequent to the inflation peak, generally even in the event that a recession materialized." Paulson's findings are based on an analysis of 17 prior major inflation peaks since 1940. Well, the bad news, a recession ensued in nearly half of the occasion. And just for the record, what did too big to fail Morgan Stanley CEO James Gorman tell conference attendees this morning in New York City? "Ladies and gentlemen, it's possible we go into a recession, obviously, probably 50-50 odds now. Remember this, precious metal investors, you're in this for the long run, not getting in one week and out the next when things seem to be going south everywhere else. So hang in there." Now, one last thing about inflation today. There are undoubtedly many drivers of the high inflation that we're seeing at the moment. But one factor that Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal emphasizes today is that investors are just plain tired of losing money. Yesterday, Derek Thompson wrote in The Atlantic about how a bunch of venture capital-fueled millennium lifestyle brands lost a ton of money last decade selling services below cost. You know, the gig economy, Uber, Grubhub, DTC companies that sold a buck for 95 cents in order to gain share of the market. Now, losing money isn't cool in an environment where investors are demanding cash flow, so no more below-cost goods for you, right? But beyond all of the Ubers and Caspers and all that, the really big story still has to be energy. Between 2010 and 2020, U.S. shale lost over $300 billion, which dwarfs anything in tech or venture capital in that time frame. This was a huge subsidy to all of us, particularly drivers, in terms of why things are getting more expensive. This has to be one of the biggest factors that ever, hit since the pandemic. Investors have lost interest in funding money-losing energy. So the price of everything has gone up. There's probably more that could be done right now to induce more energy production, but it's extremely hard to imagine investors enthusiastically putting their money into negative cash flow oil and gas companies for a long time. Let me know how you feel. Send your questions to Dave Allen at .usa@yahoo.com. We'll read them on a future program. So the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday, which will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet.